From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Busy night ahead of us. The Drew Peterson verdict is in. On the line is Robin Sachs, a former district attorney. She's an author. She's a Fox TV legal analyst, and always a pleasure to have her on the show. Hi, Robin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. OMG, Dana.
Yeah.
OMG. I am not going to Vegas. I am done putting my odds on trials. I'm done gambling and predicting, and I've decided that I'm hijacking your interview because, do you believe this?
Yeah. No. Let's just say this. I am shocked because of the evidence when you look at it, the big picture, but I am not shocked as to the conviction, and that makes no sense. We talked about it off air a little bit. You want to interview me. So, yeah, go ahead. Ask the questions.
I do want to interview you. I mean, here we are. We sat here for 4 years looking at how this case unfolded, and we've been on the roller coaster ride just as the Savio and Peterson family, frankly, has it. Let me tell you, let me just be very, very, very clear before I get into my question to you, which is I'm thrilled at this verdict, okay? I'm absolutely thrilled. But how is it that when you sit here and speak with guest after guest after guest and analyze case after case after case, you can reconcile the difference between the verdict in Peterson and the acquittal in Casey Anthony?
Right, yeah. It's 4 years.
That's not fun being on the other side of those questions, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's 4 years. I'm going to play some clips a little bit later on in the show of my final interview with Drew Peterson, where I ask him the question, what if this all goes down? What if you get arrested? What if you go to jail? What if you do this? And you'll be, you know, his response is fascinating, actually. And I look at it this way. Brodsky blew it, okay? You have an uneducated jury, and I'm not saying literally. I'm looking at a jury that there's no way on God's green earth that this jury didn't know something about this case, that this jury was not already predisposed for making their own decisions about Drew's guilt or innocence. Drew's probably one of the most hated men in North America. As soon as Brodsky put on the divorce lawyer and did that, and I think Jim Glasgow said it was a gift from heaven, that's where the case went down the drain. Am I wrong?
Right. You know, it's interesting. As I sit here and think about it, I mean, this was a case that Stacey Peterson had nothing to do with. I mean, that was what the prosecution and you know, that's of course what the court had ruled, that Stacey Peterson was not going to enter into this case whatsoever, even to the point though they couldn't even discuss how the inception of the case actually began, resulting from Stacey Peterson's disappearance. And to have the defense give that gift, I agree with you.
Yep.
I think though that, you know, I think that in some way that they were trying to address the elephant in the room, perhaps,
yeah,
and maybe look like, oh, we don't care, so we're going to say this. But it's like that reverse psychology thing kind of blew up in their face if that's what they were doing. I still can't wrap my brain around what the logic was behind that.
Well, you said, I can't remember if it was the last show or the show before.
Wait, no, last week.
Where we were talking about the case, and when you interviewed Brodsky and talked about not putting any evidence on. Was that a mistake by them?
Well, that was the thing. I think that, you know, to the defense's credit, I do think this was a very hard case. I think that it was hard, and I in terms of, you know, there was pieces of evidence that at one point were ruled inadmissible, then were deemed to be admissible. So there was, you know, and I know that Bill Brodsky did make a statement outside of the courtroom saying, listen, there are some real issues with the case based on hearsay, and I think there's, you know, some truth to it. It is there is problems with the hearsay law, and this was a, you know, first ever type of prosecution in a case like this, certainly in Illinois and probably across the country. But the fact of the matter is that it was a I think that they would have done it better by putting no one on
right.
than by putting on Harry Smith.
Yeah. No argument there. Robin Sachs is here. She's an attorney and a legal analyst at Fox 11 LA. Stacey Peterson spoke from the grave. Kathleen Savio spoke from the grave. Was it a mistake not to put Drew Peterson on the stand?
I don't think that there would have been any benefit to putting him on the stand. I know that, you know, this is kind of like the Sandusky thing. I don't know if you've heard in the news today that Sandusky saying, I really want to testify and I regret not taking the stand. Of course, he doesn't regret molesting all those boys. He regrets not taking the stand. I think that's the same thing that we'll probably hear from Drew Peterson. I didn't regret killing those women, but I did regret not taking the stand. I don't think Drew Peterson would have had anything anywhere that would have made him likable, believable, or would have helped exonerate him in any way. So I don't think it was a mistake in any way. I think his interviews would have been used against him. His police training and background would have been used against him. His, you know, domestic violence, the statements he made. He's not credible. He's certainly flipped. He's an egotistical narcissist that would have that would have come through, and I don't think he would have been able to control that.
What about the appellate process now? The defense lawyers are saying that absolutely this will be appealed, if necessary, to the Supreme Court of the United States. How long does that take? I think they set over sentencing till November, if I'm correct. He's facing 60 years. Maximum 60 years. How quick do you appeal?
Well, the appeal process doesn't really begin until the sentencing has already occurred. So first, he's going to have to be sentenced in November, and then they'll have a, you know, no doubt that they'll simultaneously, at least most defense attorneys do, bring a simultaneous notice of appeal right away on the day of sentencing, just to put everyone on notice that it's coming so that they don't blow any statutory timelines and so forth. And then they'll have probably bring on appellate lawyers to deal with the issues. Now, I do have to say that, you know, I said this last week on your show, and I do believe that there were definitely some issues that are going to be potential problems for the prosecution in terms of appeal. I mean, there was those times where prosecutorial misconduct and motions for mistrial were asked for. The one benefit that the prosecution has is that one of those motions for mistrial based on prosecution alluding to inadmissible evidence, that Drew Peterson himself had specifically requested that his attorney withdraw that motion.
Right.
So that motion that happened there is no longer preserved for appeal. He waived it there, so that's waived. And so one of the things that we've seen happen in cases, and at least we just also saw this in the George Zimmerman situation and the bail review, is that, you know, when you look at one error, you may say, okay, that's harmless. Or you look at another error independent of another, and that's harmless. And there could have a whole bunch of things that would be harmless in and of itself. But the question is, the errors together enough to create prejudice so much to the point that there would have been a different result. And there's a couple of key
Robin, did I lose you?
To what to do.
I thought I lost you there for a second.
No, I'm here. Are you here?
Yeah, no, I've got you.
Okay.
Robin Sachs is here.
Robin Sachs is in the house. Particularly those times, if the judge had a sleep on it, I mean, it caused him to scratch his head and take a snooze over it. Is that going to be enough to sway an appeals court? So I know the prosecution feels very confident that this case is going to be not overturned on appeal, but I don't think it's coincidental that they're also simultaneously, as hard as the defense is going to work to bring forth an appellate issue and a good appellate motion and try to get this case overturned, I think you're going to equally see the prosecution work very, very hard to get an indictment holding Drew Peterson responsible for Stacey Peterson. So then all of a sudden what ends up happening is now Drew Peterson's going to have to put out fires all over the place. He's going to be fighting an appeal in one place, fighting a new trial in another place, and, you know, hopefully limit his resources, and then hopefully by doing that limit his ability to be able to fight.
Okay, you stole my next question, because you're such a good media person yourself. I was going to ask about the Stacey aspect. Is that next in the hopper, and it looks like not only you, but many are saying yes. What about the defense and their tactic of using the media the way that they did? Did it backfire on them?
Well, first of all, just to address your first comment, you know me, once my mouth gets running, the brakes very rarely work, so I apologize for pummeling through that
advance.
I do think that the Stacey Peterson is, you know, the prosecution's already said that that's where they are going to, you know, work diligently to try to bring a case together. And now you have a prior conviction, so prior convictions and prior acts could weigh into it. So I think that you are going to see that. And I think that, you know, this has been a big change in terms of justice. And this was a conviction based on statements made by Kathleen Savio about threats to her and threats made, comments made to other people hiring at Hitman. We may very well see a case of comments made about and around Stacey about what could have happened to her, you know, having the basis of a indictment later on. So I think we will see that. As far as the media, I think, you know, right now I'm covering this case actually here in Los Angeles. It's the Scott Barker. You know, if you Google Beverly Hills and murder, you see only three cases really that pop up. It's the Menendez brothers, Ronnie Chase, and Scott Barker. And Scott Barker, and I'm sorry to digress on your show and steal this here, but he's a 23-year-old kid who was involved in a love triangle and is being tried for murder here in Beverly Hills, which is a huge rarity. But in this case, I'm watching this case, and I'm the only media person in the courtroom watching this case, and I'm talking to the defense, and I'm talking to DA Daley. And I said to Bradley Brunson, who is the lawyer who represented Phil Spector and Spector 2, I said, hey, can I get you on camera to talk to you? He goes, no, I'm not going to talk. And I'm like, why not? And he's like, you know, there's nothing good ever comes from it. You know, I don't really mean, you know, everything gets dissected, and whatever I say, you're going to put your spin on it and whatever. And that's really kind of the reality. I mean, it's almost like it almost goes back to the old adage of what we teach our kids. You know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. If there's nothing said, there's nothing to pick apart. So when you say, does it hurt? It doesn't help.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. The analogy of nailing a piece of, Jello to the tree. It looks like the Jello held, but will that Jello hold when it comes to the appellate process, or will Drew Peterson walk?
I think that ultimately, and again, now you're making me make predictions again, I don't know who's sitting on the appellate court and going up. I think that I do think that this was a tough case from the prosecution, and I was surprised. And I'll tell you why I'm surprised. I'm surprised because you have a conviction based on a case where the prosecution themselves really had no concept or theory presented to the jury in the exact manner by which Drew Peterson killed Kathleen Savio. All we know is that it was not an accidental death. And so to have a ruling by the law enforcement that was one time deemed to be accidental and then have it changed to be homicide without knowing how it was actually done and being pieced together by statements of somebody who is dead and statements made to other people that were many, many years ago is really tough stuff. It's not a slam dunk conviction. And kudos to the prosecution because they fought long and hard with a very hard case. And they pieced it together like a fine tapestry, and they did a good job doing that. But I could have easily, under the same set of circumstances, seen the case have been an acquittal. I mean, well, I just can't help but to look at the Casey Anthony case where the jury kept saying, well, we just don't know how she did it. And here you had smell, you had motive, you had, Zanny the nanny, you had all this other stuff. And in that case, you didn't have a conviction. So, you know, I wonder, and this is my theory with to Casey Anthony, was part of what I felt was that from the prosecution point of view in Casey Anthony, was it seemed that they had drank a lot of their own Kool-Aid and the prosecution had listened to too much of their own press and gotten too much of a chest bump from Nancy Grace thinking that they're going to win this thing as a slam dunk. I think the reverse happens here. I think the prosecution in this case wasn't getting chest bumps from CNN and Nancy Grace. They lost interest in this case because it didn't have all of, it became technical and difficult, and they step behind their case and they put it together like a fine tapestry. So I think that this is, you know, very easily could have been the same result, but with the different kind of aura of prosecutors out there, you had a different result.
Robin Sachs, attorney at law, legal analyst, Fox 11 LA. Always a pleasure, ma'am. We'll talk to you soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye. That's Robin Sachs, and here's Drew Peterson talking to me.
Well, it's just my kids, you know, miss their mother every day. So it's just like it's celebrated or to, let's call it, memorialize it or whatever you say is like a little out of line. If everybody else wants to do that, it's something that my family and my kids are just not going to get involved in because, you know, we miss her being around every day. So it's like just us again, it's just another day.
It's just another day. Well, those kids now don't have a mom and they don't have a dad. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Someone who was at the trial, Beth Karras, in session, True TV correspondent. Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Crazy day for you?
What a day. Everyone expected the verdict would be today, but it's always crazy when it comes in. We learned at about 220, 225 that they had reached a verdict, and it was read at 245. I'm talking Central Time. So all of us outside, you know, the media, it was actually a good time. So we kind of had our lunch, and, you know, we were just kind of pins and needles because the jury had had that question not too long before, just before lunch. Just to be clear, what do you mean by unanimous?
Right.
Like, what are we talking about? There's certain words you think people just know the meaning of. In any event, you know, so the jury files in. They don't look over at Drew Peterson. That's generally a sign it's a verdict against a defendant, but not always.
Okay.
And the foreperson, much to the surprise of many, the 22-year-old young man going to film school, going to junior college film school now, came from Puerto Rico, where he was born, to Joliet, or to the Will County, in 2001. His father's a principal at Bolingbrook High School. I believe this foreperson went there also, which is where Drew Peterson's son, Tommy, graduated valedictorian a couple years ago. And, you know, they were probably in high school at the same time, although, you know, several years apart. So Tommy's 19 and this young man is 22. In any event, he was a foreperson,
yeah.
Not like the older retired businessman in the back row everyone thought would be the foreperson. So he hands up the verdict form, and the judge reads that, and it was just, you know, one count, guilty first-degree murder. The judge had said no reaction from anybody in the gallery,
yeah.
Regardless of what the verdict is. I was sitting right behind Kathleen Savio's family. I was in the third row. They were in the first two. And it was her two sisters, her father, stepmother, her nephew, and his wife, and then also Stacey Peterson's aunt, Candace Aiken, came in from California. She was in front of me. Oh, my God. It was like they jumped, and it was like, and I gasped, and then sobbed. So many tissues were out there. They were crying. I mean, the deputies were telling them to be quiet because the judge said no reaction. There were 11 deputies in the courtroom, depending upon, you know, if there was going to be violent reaction, 8 in uniform, 3 in plainclothes. And then the judge set, you know, the sentencing date, a motion date, because the defense will move to set aside the verdict or move for a new trial.
Yep.
But the sentencing will be November 26th. Excuse me. Then Drew Peterson was remanded to the custody of the sheriff. So there's no bail amount on him now. He had been in on $20 million bail, which is the same as remand. Remand means you are in, you can't possibly post bail, even if a billionaire came along to do it. So he'll be sentenced on November 26th, assuming the judge, you know, enters the verdict and doesn't and denies the new trial motion. We expect that will happen, because if he were to grant it, he would probably have to find error in what he did at the trial. In any event, then Drew Peterson will probably go to state 204 classification and then to one of any number of prisons here, and he will get somewhere between 20 and 60 years. He may get on the higher side. He's 58 years old now, tantamount to a life sentence. He was a police officer when he murdered Kathleen Savio, and that will be held against him, and he could possibly lose his pension.
One quick question before I let you go, and I appreciate you coming on. You've been working really hard today. What about Stacey Peterson now?
Well, you know, everyone's asking that question. What about Stacey? Her family came to the courthouse. They were talking to me later, even those who weren't in the courtroom, because Stacey's next. You know what's interesting? Stacey help convict him.
Absolutely.
Her word, spoken through the pastor and the divorce attorney she consulted with, Savio's divorce attorney, probably are what did it,
yeah.
Right? Because those words of what she knew about the night Savio died placed Drew Peterson outside of the home he was sharing with Stacey Peterson, and you know, obviously could give him the opportunity to be in Savio's home to commit this murder. So they may not have liked each other in life, but Stacey, in spirit, in death, whatever, helped to convict Kevin Savio's murderer.
Absolutely. Beth Karras from In Session True TV, the hardest working gal on TV today. Thank you, ma'am.
All right, my pleasure.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Beth's been going crazy. Hey, watch Headline News. Right from 12 or whenever it was that the verdict came out, she was just on Nancy Grace a few minutes ago. Yeah. Stacey Peterson, her words. Did Joel Brodsky blow it? Is this all going to get turned around on appeal? I don't know. We're going to talk to Blink from Blink on Crime here in just a couple of minutes. And then a little bit later on, Pat Brown's going to be here to give her take on Drew Peterson. Now, I recorded the interview with Pat Brown a little earlier on today, so we didn't know the verdict yet. So there's a little clip on the end of my interview with Pat Brown of me asking Drew Peterson the question, what happens if this all goes bad? I wonder if he's still thinking the same lines. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with our coverage on the Drew Peterson verdict today. Blink from our sister blog, Blink on Crime, joins us. Good day, ma'am. How are you?
Good evening, Dana. How are you?
I'm fine. Listen, before we get started to talk about Drew Peterson, I want to publicly pass on my condolences on the passing of your mom. And I also want to say that in the few years that I've known you, we've never met face-to-face, but we've talked on the phone and worked together on things, that usually kids are a pretty good offshoot of their parents. And this is a whole good much amount for your mom. She must have been a hell of a gal because she's got a hell of a daughter. So condolences about the passing of your mom. And it's tough, but you're a tough gal. You'll get through it.
Thank you. And, oh, did you have to lead with that? Thank you, Dana. I appreciate it.
Yes, because we're going to talk about depressing stuff now. And we always celebrate life, and your mom was, I just look at you, and if you're anything like your mom, and I'm sure you are, she must have been a great lady. So let's talk about Drew. I'm playing some clips from the pastor, Drew and I, and one of the questions I asked him was, if things go bad, how are you going to react? And people will hear that a little bit later on, but I want to ask your reaction on the verdict today.
My reaction is a couple. I'm thrilled. You know, following both, Beth and our lovely Robin is a difficult situation because they could not have been more on point, really, in this case. And the reality is I'm thrilled to see that it wasn't the CSI theory, you know, as we saw, and Robin astutely made the comparison to the Casey Anthony case, which is not an easy one for me because we all kind of feel, I don't want to speak for others, but I feel that was a travesty.
Sure. Yep.
But in this case, you know, the jurors were left to conceptualize a bit, and they did just that. And I'm proud of them. I commend them, and I see this as a victory over, you know, cases that we've seen in a high profile area that did not go so well. So my first response is to say kudos to the jurors because this was a difficult case, in my opinion. And I agree with Robin. I was not sure that this was going to result, and that's probably putting it mildly, I was not sure that this was going to result in a conviction
mm-hmm.
because, you know, that's, you know, he's a little bit of a slimy sucker in that way. He's gotten out of more than he's, you know, been held accountable for. So I'm thrilled.
I was on the phone with Pat Brown recording, and I'm going to play the interview next, an interview, and the verdict hadn't come out yet. And just as I hung up, it came out, and Pat emailed me back with a holy, well, I'll let you fill in the last part of it, because most of the...
I know, Pat.
most of the pundits and the legal minds and the commentators, etc., looked at the case and the hearsay element of it and
sure.
And thought, you know, this sucker is going to get away with this. How much did the media and Joel Brodsky, and I've said it many times, and I hate to sound like a broken record, said to me very early on, and I was one of the first people to put him on the air, and I took a lot of flack for it. He said that he is going to do as much as he can in the media for his client. Did that backfire on him?
I don't think it backfired on him. I think that, let me answer your question. I think the media played a terrific part, both negatively and positively.
Yep.
Because, you know, again, I feel a little bit like I'm, you know, Robin's mouthpiece. Although I haven't spoken to her about it, she's right. Media lost interest in this case because of other, for lack of a better word, salacious events, you know, that are occurring. And, you know, you just get tired of seeing that guy's mug.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happened. And so, therefore, I think that, you know, there was nothing sexy about this case. It was really tried on the merit, and the merits were not sound, as you pointed out. You know, it was hearsay based. You know, Kathleen Savio, her death was declared an accident, you know, as you know, many, many years ago. And as a result, now you have, you know, what we'll call is, you know, that dotted line to Stacey Peterson, his missing fourth wife. And, you know, it's just not reasonable to assume that nobody on that jury understood that linkage.
What about the question, Blink from Blink on Crime is here, that I posed about the jury not, or being able to say that they were not influenced by this case one way or the other? Drew Peterson, probably one of the most hated people around. How can you not be influenced by this guy and all the media he did and all the taunting, kind of come and catch me if you can sort of thing?
I think that I believe that our system of jurisprudence, I think our trier of facts, our juries, I think it's the best system in the world. It's not infallible, but I think that it is the best I'm aware of. And I think that people legitimately do the best that they can, you know, with kind of a level playing field. And as you know, and you and I have talked about, in a significantly high-profile cases with substantial media and sequestered juries, by the way,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they work. I really believe they give what I'll call a prejudice to a defendant. And I could quote, you know who they are.
Yeah.
You know those cases.
Yep.
And so in this case, I think that it was, he's such a dislikable person, and I'm trying to be, you know, professional, but, I mean, to me, he's a slug. Yeah. And so I do believe that people's impressions of a defendant and what they're hearing in terms of testimony and what their guts are telling them. I mean, I think there was a holdout for a while, if I recall correctly. But I believe the system works, and I don't think that this is going to be overturned on appeal.
No.
I really don't. I think this one is going to stick. I think Drew Peterson is a sociopath, and I don't think that he is going to get this. I think he probably is in for a rough evening, you know, until that, you know, light switch kind of goes to the place that it goes to, you know, I'm going to beat this, I'm a cop, I'm a this, I'm a that,
yep.
Simply because he has for so many years. But I think it's sound.
It would be so huge, the hearsay part of it, the Crawford versus Washington, we've done several stories and several different cases on that if this doesn't get turned around on appeal, how important that will be for victims, that victims from the grave, and you hate to use that analogy, but it's true, will be able to say what happened to them. And I don't know. I'm not going to say I don't think it'll be turned over on appeal. I hope it's not, and I hope that the victims are able to continue speaking, because really, Stacey Peterson is the one here who helped convict Drew.
She did, and I think Beth Karras characterized that very, very well. What I would like to see going forward, and you know, this might be a little obtuse, if you will, but What I would like to see is I would like a conversation to be had now that this verdict has been handed down and Drew Peterson is he's behind bars and for the foreseeable future is going to stay there.
Yeah.
And likely, even if, you know, he's going to, well, of course he's going to entertain his appellate, you know, remedies, but the likelihood of him overturning this is very low. What I would like to see is a conversation with the prosecutor's office, with his stepbrother, Thomas Morphy.
Yeah.
I would like to see a conversation that grants Mr. Morphy immunity. And in the event that he knows where Stacey Peterson is, because she deserves to be found.
Yep.
Her family deserves resolution in the case. And at this point, he's behind bars and he can't hurt anybody, you know, conceptually anymore. And I truly, truly believe that now is the time to extend that opportunity to who I believe is a significant witness in this case.
Oh, big time, big time. Our friend Red sends a quick email, and he's saying you're right. Red doesn't say that much about us, but no, I'm just kidding.
Not so much.
When you're talking about the Anthony jury versus compared to the Peterson jury, that the Peterson jury was able to act normally. They weren't locked up. They got to go home. They got to do their thing. So important. What about the cameras in the courtroom? Cameras in the courtroom for Anthony, no cameras for Peterson. However, cameras all over the place. Do you think it made much of a difference?
No, I don't think that it made much of a difference because I don't think you can take the fact that there was not cameras in this particular trial on its face value. In other words, you can't just juxtapose that with the events of Florida because Florida is probably one of the most liberal public domain states in the country. So it's not just that you get to see, you know, the trial. It's that documentation and public record is so free. Criminal records, you know, property records, every record you can almost think about is publicly available in that state. So it's not simply that you can, you know, say, well, we saw it, so it influenced, you know, jurors in particular, because in that case, they were sequestered, so they weren't supposed to be seeing
right.
any of this. And I can tell you as a fact that the witnesses in that case were invoked when it started. So there's, you know, kind of rules of engagement, if you will, that are also at play. I don't think that you can just say, you know, across the board, well, the camera in the courtroom made a difference per se, because, you know, there's certainly many cases that we don't see. On a you know, media front, does that matter? Sure it does.
Yeah.
Sure it does. Your True TVs of the world, your, you know, other, you know, areas to glean, Datelines, you know, your national publications, your national news shows, does it glean, you know, sound bites? Does it glean evening news? Is, you know, Nancy Grace going to be able to feature it? That is a decision that they make. So that's a true statement. How it relates to the jury per se, I don't think it's a fair, I don't think it's a level playing field to ask that question in those, you know, environments.
Well, it's going to be the case is far from over. We'll hear lots. The lawyers will be back. The appellate process will be back. You name it, we'll hear lots. But you're right, so right, about the Stacey Peterson family. And I think that's next up in the hopper. Something's going to be done there. But before I let you go, Blink, from Blink on Crime, looking at blinkoncrime.com, I see a review of a book that I featured here on the show a while back.
You did.
Called The Charmer. Let's talk about that.
Well, Richard Mutie, yep, and Charles Buckley asked me to review their work after my interview, which was not specific to that. I think we were just on the same show,
yep,
if I recall, and had asked me to review their work. And as you brought up my mom in the piece that I wrote about her, that was actually the book that I had asked her if she wanted to read, and she said, I'm not going to do your work for you. I'll read it if you want.
Yeah.
But so I did have an opportunity to read it. And it's a fantastic piece of work. And I say that because I think it's really difficult to combine, you know, a nonfiction account, which is a chronology of, you know, a criminal from spanning from literally like 1957 to 1987 in effect, and have it be engaging for true crime genre that isn't, you know, looking at, you know, I run into this in my own work, trying to, you know, to display or present facts that are true and frankly macabre in a way that is engaging to advocates and, you know, folks that I want to spurn. I want them to care, you know, about it. So I think that is a difficult enterprise, and I think they did a really, really good job. I am not, you know, I'm new age, Dana, as you know, probably to a fault. I am Kindle queen. I am audiobook. If I'm commuting, that's what I'm doing. Or, you know, having the physical book in my hands, which I have not done in a long time, was so important to me. You know, dog-eared pages and highlight saturation, as I wrote about, is true.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic read. It's important in that, you know, first of all, I'm a Jersey person, and this individual was as well. It's important from an advocacy perspective because there's a moral to the story. You know, at the end of the day, the good guys won. You know, I'm thinking ahead. I don't want to give a spoiler situation. But there is so much wrong with the criminal justice system at that time that is parallel to some of the things I'm seeing still today that I felt it was such an important story.
That's a good one. It's a good one for sure. Blink from Blink on Crime. .com. Check it out. It's our sister blog. She covers all the stories and gives a voice to those that can't be heard. Stay strong, my friend. Use the strength that your mother gave you, and keep smiling. That's so important. We'll talk soon.
Oh, heart you, Dana. Thank you. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Blink from Blink on Crime. And when I sat down with Pat Brown, probably North America's premier profiler, criminal profiler, we hadn't had a verdict yet. She wasn't able to come on the show live tonight, but I sat down and we talked about her new book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life. That and a little bit about the jury process. And again, the figures, just when I finished the interview, the verdict came in. But at the end of the clip that I'm going to play you, listen to the question that I asked Drew Peterson and his response, and wonder in your mind if he's thinking the same way today. Here's Pat Brown. Okay, we're back. Everyone knows criminal profiler Pat Brown. Her new book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life, is available through Amazon and other fine retailers. Click on the link in the show notes to pick up the book. I encourage you to. Pat, always a pleasure. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good, Dana. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to talk about Drew Peterson. Now, we're recording this a little bit early. It's about 3 o'clock Eastern. The show is at live 9 o'clock Eastern. And at this time, according to the Chicago Tribune, the jurors are still deliberating. No decision yet. But let's set Drew aside for a second and talk about the book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life. How's it going? You're doing lots of press for it?
Well, I have. I was up a couple weeks ago when the book came out, doing the Today Show and Fox and Friends, and that was a lot of fun. And I'll be heading out on Tuesday to L.A. to tape a show for Ricky Lake, which is going to be her brand new show that's just coming back on the air. We're going to be doing a big book giveaway out there on the show, so if anybody lives in L.A., go to Ricky's show and pick up a book on the 12th.
Well, that sounds exciting. Let's knowing you, when you write a book about how to save your daughter's life, you don't pull any punches. You tell it just like it is. Let's do a quick synopsis about what it's about.
Sure. Well, you know, at this point, you know, it's kind of funny. Sometimes you think people get mad when you tell them the way things really are. And I'm like this. Hey, you can hate me, but love your daughter.
Yeah.
Love your daughter enough to read the book, because I do go into – I try to think of everything that might affect your teenage daughter's life in a negative way, that might mess her life up, might ruin it. The kind of things where, you know, when your daughter's 22 and things have gone badly, you look back and you think, wow, I wish I had known this. I had an interesting experience when I was traveling. I ran into a woman who well, I was telling her about the book, and I was telling her I had a chapter on prostitution, and she goes, I wish I had read that. And here I was standing in her beautiful home, a nice upper middle class home with a beautiful pool outside, you know, and her daughter, she said, had gotten involved in prostitution, and she couldn't get her back out of it. And she said, I wish your book had been out when my daughter was a teen.
Yeah. Pat Brown is here talking about her new book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life. When you look at that and you look at specific examples, will we see and read about several specific examples in the book?
Oh, yeah. Well, these, you know, there's. I try to start in the earlier part of your daughter's life, the early years, because that is very important. You know, sometimes when we have to think, if our daughters are like, say, 10 or 11, even 8, you know, they're going to be teens soon enough, and what we want to have is two things going. We want to have a good relationship with those our daughters, and both the mom and dad, good relationship with our daughters, and we want to have them respect us so they'll respect our opinion, and we want to make sure that it's going in a positive direction, because, you know, when you start a downhill slide, you know, even when you're just 12 years old, sometimes it's hard to pull back at her. So the early years are really important. And then from there, I go into everything about, you know, things your daughter might encounter, which could be the problems of social media, who she might meet on the Internet and Facebook, bullying. I go into risky relationships she might be involved in, you know, for example, just in a dating relationship at school. And how many times have we heard about a young girl having a boyfriend who, you know, hurts her after she dumps him, or kills her after she dumps him? And then on into, you know, drugs, drinking, partying, getting pregnant, also the serial rapists, serial killers that are out there that, you know, endanger your daughter's physical health when she walks. Oh, and date rape, which is big these days. Yeah. So there's a lot of things out there. Now, I'm not trying to make parents paranoid, but I'm trying to make them educated, you know, and help, you know, educate their daughters. It's kind of like if you're traveling someplace new in the world, you'd want to find out where you were going and what the lay of the land was and what's safe to do and what isn't. Making good decisions doesn't mean you won't go, but you want to know what you're doing when you know before you take that trip. Your daughters are going into a heck of a new world when they go into the teenage years and go into high school and college. So let's get them prepared. Let's know what they're doing and keep them from going to some of those really dangerous places, which they may not come out of whole.
Absolutely. The book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life. Speaking of risky relationships, let's talk about Drew Peterson.
There you go. And two of the wives, I've talked to a few more, you know, there's more than, there were four wives, so yeah. The first two didn't do too well with Drew Peterson either, but at least they're still alive. The last two, you know, we don't believe that Stacy is running around Thailand with her lover. And certainly the third wife, we know what happened to her. So they did get involved with a risky relationship with Drew Peterson. And whether he's, quote, guilty of any actual homicides or not, he certainly does represent a psychopathic personality, which lured these women in.
The jury, as we're recording this, have been out for 13 hours. Their most recent note to the judge asked for the definition of unanimous. And so everybody's scratching their heads, and the pundits are wondering, what does that mean? But let's go back a little bit. You and I have talked about juries for years, several different cases. How much spotlight will be on this jury? And does this jury think about that spotlight because of other high-profile cases?
Well, surely after Casey Anthony, everybody looks at the jury a little skeptically. It's like, what are you going to do this time? and the unfortunate part is, a lot of times we just want a conviction if we don't like the person and we think they perhaps have committed that horrible crime. We just want that conviction. And we're angry if we don't get it, like in Casey Anthony's case, and which I think the evidence was overwhelmingly there, and there was no excuse for that jury to let her off except for the fact that they're not trained properly and they're not professional jury. They're a pool of people that are just pulled in and go figure, you know, just roll the dice. And in this particular case, they're not going to like Drew Peterson, you know. And they're going to like him less than they did like Casey Anthony, because at least Casey Anthony, they can say her father, you know, well, maybe her father did molest and rape her, and therefore she's messed up. Maybe he had control over her. But they're not going to think anybody had control over Drew Peterson. You know, he's running his own little show. So I don't think he's going to get any sympathy. So I think there's more of a likelihood they would convict with less evidence than there was in the Casey Anthony trial, way less evidence, which there actually, quite frankly, is no good evidence in this trial to speak of. Right. And if I were on that jury, I would probably not convict him in spite of the fact I think he could well be guilty, but there is no physical evidence linking him to the crime scene. You know, another, you know, there's not even absolute proof she was murdered, but let's say we study that and we say, okay, we're going to go with the autopsy that says she, you know, the decision that she was murdered. We're going to go with that. We still don't know that some other guy didn't come in that house and do her in.
Yeah.
We don't know that. We could surmise that it's less likely than Drew doing it, but we don't know. And the statements from Stacy are really, you know, kind of questionable, because you have to question character. You know, why is she staying with this guy that's murdered somebody? Why is she talking to a lawyer about getting more money off of him if she can basically blackmail him instead of going to the police?
Yeah.
So is she telling the truth, or is she making that stuff up, you know? So, I mean, it's just not really solid, great evidence where you'd say, well, there's no reasonable doubt. So I think, personally, I think he's probably guilty, but I don't think the evidence is good enough. I think the case was screwed up. But will the jury convict?
Yeah.
I think the likelihood is very possible, just because they don't like him. And I don't think that's the right reason. But I think what they're doing now is trying to figure out what to do, because I do believe they're taking so long because they know the evidence sucks.
Yep.
They don't like them.
Yep.
You know? So the question is, do we convict somebody without the evidence because we think he's guilty, or do we stand by what the law really says we should do, which is only convict if we have the evidence and die?
Yeah,
I think that's what they're struggling with right now.
I agree. When we're done the interview, I'm going to play a clip of an interview I did with Drew Peterson a few years ago, and I asked him the question. And he hadn't been arrested yet, and I asked him the question, to paraphrase, Drew, what's going to happen if you're arrested, and what about if you're not arrested, and how are you going to feel? And his response to me was, I'll be pleasantly surprised if I don't get arrested. So I'm wondering if he's thinking the same thing now, or if he's known all along his goose is cooked. Let's talk about Drew Peterson, the man. If he gets acquitted, are we going to hear nothing but Drew Peterson on all the talk shows, and he's going to get right back into his media-loving ways?
Well, he certainly does love the media.
Right.
We know that. And he's going to be just glowing, you know, and crowing, you know, if he gets off. No question about it. If he gets convicted, we can surely see an appeal coming down the pike.
Oh, you bet.
But the jurors, I think they're in a horrible position, which is one reason I'm for professional jurors. If they don't convict them, they are going to be skewered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like the Casey Anthony people, but I think for the wrong reasons. You know, they're going to be skewered because everybody wants Drew Peterson to go down. You know, and if they do convict him, everybody's going to cheer, even if the evidence wasn't there. And I just think that it just kind of gives me the eebie-jeebies, because I just think this case should never have even gone to court with the evidence that they had.
Pat Brown is here, a criminal profiler. She has a new book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life. What about the defense team? You know, we think of Jose Baez in the Casey Anthony case and the hatred for him. Joel Brodsky and the rest of the crew marching around the courthouse and all their media that they've been doing. How much does that play into the jurors' minds?
Well, I think in the Casey Anthony case, I mean, in the beginning, I thought, wow, this guy's just such an idiot that the jury's not going to fall for anything. But once he brought that father, you know, raped his daughter routine in,
right.
You know, there are so many people who can easily buy that possible story and feel sorry for whomever has suffered through such a thing, being molested, raped by their own father. They can believe that a man can control a woman. So I think once he brought that in, that was really actually very clever. Even though it's based on absolutely nothing, I think it was an incredibly clever defense move, which unfortunately in our crappy justice system, we allow that kind of garbage to go on. We don't have proper trials, in my opinion. We have dog and pony shows. I don't think we had as much of that in this case, although the prosecution, I think, brought some stuff forward that they should never have brought in there. They don't care, you know. And so we have a lot of times they'll bring stuff into the courtroom, which will then get thrown out and say, oh, the jury is not to pay attention to that. And I'll say, come on, you know, is that the most idiotic thing in the world? Like,
yes.
Let's not pay attention to what you just said. Of course you're going to pay attention. We all know that, and the lawyers know that. So it's all game playing as opposed to really having an honest, honorable trial where the proper things are done and the person does get a defense but not a dog and pony show, you know, and that's what really bothers me about the whole system. So I think, you know, in each one of these cases, it always comes down to a crapshoot.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It really does.
Absolutely. Pat Brown's here. We've got about a minute and a half left, Pat. I don't know. Again, it's 3:15 Eastern, and the jury is still out. They've been asking questions, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think we're going to see a verdict today? Is it going to take a little bit longer? You've talked about that already. I think they're trying to do what they can to convict them, and they're probably battling.
Right. I think they're stuck with the problem is, I think the biggest issues are going to be the hearsay issues.
Yeah.
You know, how much weight can they place on hearsay? You know, a bunch of stuff said about somebody without any actual physical proof that they ever committed the crime. I mean, you know, and that's what they're going to be really, I think that's really where they're stuck. And they said they passed a law to allow this crap into this trial, a special one, and it's going to change the face of trials from now on in that state because of what they passed through, allowing all this hearsay crap to come in. And there's been no reason in the past why we don't allow that, because it's hearsay. That's why it's called hearsay. We don't know if it was ever really said, or even the vein in which it was said. Sometimes people will say something, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, when you repeat it, that's the way it was said. Just because there's some specific words. Everybody, you know, hears things differently depending on, you know, what their situation is and how they're connected to the person that's being talked about. So we don't even know if they heard or understood it correctly.
Yeah.
And there's no way to prove it. So that's why hearsay is usually not allowed. So I think they've got a mess on their hands. And, you know, one part of me wishes they convict him because I don't like him either. But the other part says, you know, this is not good for the justice system for the convict on this kind of crummy evidence. So it's a really rough. It's really a sad situation.
I agree, and I think the case is far from being over. Pat Brown, her new book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life, available from Amazon. Click on the notes and the link in the show notes, and you'll be able to pick it up. Pat, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Dana.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Pat Brown, criminal profiler, again with her new book, How to Save Your Daughter's Life, and I won't stumble through this time. Click on the link in the show notes to pick it up from Amazon. I asked Drew Peterson before he was arrested what would happen if he was arrested. Here's Drew's response.
I've asked you this question before, but obviously you have a contingency plan when and if something like that does happen. But you can't help but hear these things, and your kids, especially your older ones, hear these things. How do you deal with that?
We just get everybody ready for something, you know. It's just like you prepare for the worst, and if the best happens, you're delightfully surprised. That's about all I do. You know, you hear things, and we've heard so much things, and we just deal with it each time. So
we'll see. Will Drew deal with it and be pleasantly surprised, or will he be spending a long time in jail? I don't know. The clock is ticking. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And we are back, and Drew Peterson was found guilty. Could be sentenced up to 60 years in jail. The story, far from over. The next story that needs to be told is what happened to Stacy Peterson. That's it. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.